from the land of the free and the home of the Chiefs, with two-man coverage of the red and gold, this is the Locked On Chiefs Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
And the Chiefs have wrapped up the AFC West Championship for the second year in a row for the first time in franchise history.
Franchise history? I would have never, if you asked me that last week, I'd have never known that they'd not won back-to-back ever.
Yeah, I had no idea as well, and it is very surprising, but they are the AFC West champs. They are locked into the number four seed with the Titans loss to the Rams. They cannot improve to the three seed, but they are going to the playoffs, and they will host a game in 2 weeks.
That is plenty of ramifications, including what's going to happen next week. We will get to that in a little bit. Make sure you're subscribed. We're going to be working all week through some new stuff. Take a little bit of time off for the holiday, but we will be back with you. I'm Ryan Tracy, the founder of Rogue Analytics and a writer over at Chiefs Digest with Matt Derrick. Check all that stuff out online, and we'll have some information for you this week.
And I'm Chris Clark. I write at Arrowhead Addict. I'm a staff writer there, and I am the editor of LockedOnChiefs.com, so be sure to go check that out. We're going to have a bunch of stuff covering the Chiefs and the AFC West Championship and the number four seed going into the playoffs this year.
Poor Chris is the guy that has to edit me when I can't spell.
Which is all the time, so please have mercy
on
me.
Only when I'm awake. Only when I'm awake.
Thank you. You're making
my
point.
So, hey, you know, up and down, definitely some things to be a little concerned about, but Chiefs come home and take care of business.
Yeah, they get the win, and that's all that really matters. They took care of business as they needed to. Alex Smith had a pretty good game, just over 300 yards. You, Chiefs Kingdom, you're welcome. I set him in fantasy football, so he was going to have a good week throwing the ball. It's kind of the way that's worked for me this year.
Well, you know, and on top of that, just a side note, this win knocks the Raiders out of playoff contention, so that's a plus two.
Yeah. Raiders are out. I think, are the Chargers still alive? I think, maybe.
Mathematically, yes, they are.
Okay. You know, and we'll see how that ends up shaking out over the next couple of days, or I guess over the next week. But it's good to see Kansas City be in this situation and knowing that they are going to the playoffs for the second. They're going to be hosting a playoff game in Arrowhead, and it's going to be loud. I don't think that the crowd was really there today, and I kind of understand it. You would love to see them there, but, you know, today is one of those days where it's really hard.
Yeah, it's a tough one when you're getting ready for the holiday, you know. But luckily, it was an opponent that probably wasn't up to snuff to begin with. But the Chiefs came out and they were aggressive early. I thought Alex Smith played a solid game all the way around. Little bit of here and there had some issues, but I think really, as he breaks 4,000 yards for the first time in his career, and for only what is it, the 11th time in Chiefs history, he's up there in yardage with Trent Green now. At least they came out running and they got things done.
Yeah, they got things done. They looked good enough to win the division for the second straight year. Kansas City for the second time Kansas City is only the second team in NFL history to have a QB over 4,000 yards, a wide receiver over 1,000, a tight end over 1,000, and a running back over 1,000. That's impressive.
Yeah, it is. I mean, between Alex Smith's season, and if you missed what we were talking about on Friday, check that out at ChiefsDigest.com. Some of the accomplishments that he had prior to this game were still outstanding. But now to round it out with the wide receiver, the tight end, your big three Pro Bowlers, the three cogs of this offense, all of them surpassing 1,000 yards. That's not only unique, but it's something that they have to continue to build upon. They have all these guys for the foreseeable future, for the next couple of years, with Kelce already signing an extension, the rookie and Hunt. The only question is the quarterback that'll be thrown to them, and we'll discuss that as the offseason goes. We may not have to wait very long, in fact, but, this sets them up that if the line can solidify, because they didn't play the greatest game today, but if they can get back to where they were the week before last as they go into these playoffs, this offense is ready to roll.
Absolutely. I think the offense looks like it is going to be very good, and it's something that they can build on moving forward. They had a little bit of a I don't know if it's a snafu would be the right words for it. You wish that they would have done a little bit better going into halftime because it looked like they left points on the board there. You know, another thing that we didn't mention that needs to be is Butker passed Nick Lowry for most field goals in Chiefs history today. And, you know, that last miss, it didn't look very pretty, but at the same time, it looked like the announcer said the ball didn't get down in time. I'll give him a pass on that. He's been fantastic for Kansas City.
Yeah, I give you credit, and he's going to lead these special teams into the postseason. A lot of Terrence Smith on the tackling side of the special teams, but Butker really, really making the Chiefs look smart in grabbing him off of the practice squad from another team and taking him all the way to the Pro Bowl. Definitely a bright spot today. One of the soft spots today was the pass catchers. By my count, four drops today, including Travis Kelce, who only caught 50% of his targets. And old Burt Wilson, for all of his running well on these short screens, man, he cost him at least one touchdown, ended up three receptions on eight targets for the day.
Yeah, that was a big drop by him. You pointed out during the game that's one thing he has struggled with in his career is catching the ball over his shoulder, and he continues to struggle with that. You know what? He played a good game. I thought he had a very big third down conversion late in the game when Smith audible and called his number on a screen pass with Travis Kelce out blocking in front. So I'm still happy with the game he played. Yes, you would love to see him catch all the balls thrown to him, and that was a big play that he could have had. But I think he's been very good for Kansas City this season.
Yeah, I agree. Still, I'm just pointing out that, you know, this was not his best day.
No.
A couple of clutch plays. And then that play in particular that you mentioned, big block from Ty Hill on that one, the 5 foot, 8.5 wide receiver.
Yeah, and see, I missed that. I didn't see him actually get the block. I saw Kelce, but, you know, I saw that you'd mentioned that. You bring up Tyreek Hill. What a player he is going to be in the future for Kansas City. He is a guy that I definitely want Kansas City to sign long-term as soon as they possibly can, which would be after next season. Yes, I know we're talking about it early, but if you watch the way he plays and the way he is able to contort his body and adjust for the football, it is simply amazing.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I had a follower point out that he caught a couple passes that were underthrown. I don't count those as interceptions because, you know, if they're underthrown, you should be playing into the defense. The defense should be able to make a play on the ball, but Hill keeps coming up with them. I think that's really the key for him is that his ball skills, his body control have been underrated this entire season. I think he had a touchdown catch that was overruled. I think that he really shows that play in particular, whether the refs could see it from the view that they had or not on the replay. Just the fact that he was that aware and had that much vertical to that catch to try and come down and get – he definitely had the second foot in. I think right. That shows his maturation as a receiver overall.
Yeah, no, and I think the NFL needs to start going on the side of calling it a touchdown beforehand because at that point it's automatically reviewed. They can overturn it if it's not a touchdown. But if you think it's possible that it's a touchdown, you call it a touchdown on the field because then it's automatically reviewed, doesn't force the coach to make a decision. You know, the thing that I questioned looking at that play was I couldn't tell if his first foot got down. There was no view that showed his first foot actually touched down in bounds. They kept saying it did, but I didn't see it touch down in bounds.
Well, and here's the thing for me, and I am fed up, as everyone is with the catch rules in particular. The way they're worded, they need to be simplified. But here's my thing with the central review, back to New York. My big problem with it is that you don't have any context. You're looking at that play cold, and I think it has to continue to be, if not the refs on the field having a screen to look at, there has to at least be communication between what the side judge saw, what the call was on the field, and the guy who's reviewing it back in the booth in New York. That's my big problem with it because I think a lot of the details that are missed are because the person making the decision is not the person that the play was in front of or doesn't have any context from that person.
Yeah, but it's really hard for there to be any kind of context added to you want to take context out sometimes when you're looking at review. I get where you're coming from, but and I get people are frustrated. I'm frustrated with the calls that have been this season with the, you know, I honestly, the more I think about it, I cannot remember so many controversial calls going back to the central replay in years past. There's at least six or seven that people are just calling out central replay for. And I don't remember there being that many in years past. I think Al Riveron is going to have a really hard time explaining himself with all the calls that he seems to be getting wrong. And thank you. There was somebody that was actually at the game that had a fantastic view of the catch and did show the first foot get down. But unfortunately, that was not a camera angle from the TV crew.
Well, and here's another problem. You know, they've experimented with pylon cameras. There's no reason the NFL cannot put in a closed circuit system with a camera on a pole above the corner of the end zone so that they can get their own view slightly overhead of the lines. There shouldn't be any question about this. We shouldn't have to worry about whether the broadcast camera had a sunspot in it or if whatever cameraman wasn't moving correctly. Whatever it is, the NFL has to make the investment. The technology is there so that they can see the lines of the end zone on every single plane of it, both the back line and the end line, as well as both sides.
Well, you mentioned the technologies there, and this was something that was a big deal last week, and we don't need to get into it too much, but it's kind of funny when you think the technology's there, yet they still have the chain gang. There are so many things that the NFL is doing at a substandard rate for something that makes so much money. It's amazing to me. And chain gang's one of them. Instant replay, I think, needs to be upgraded. I would agree with you there. There are several other instances of where they really need to make upgrades that wouldn't really cost them a ton of money and would improve gameplay and the speed at which the game can be played.
Yeah, and the validity of calls. I mean, between all the other angst that's going on with this league from its fan base, get the calls right. That's what the fans want no matter what it is. And I think you straighten that out and you buy back some of your fans that are pretty frustrated right now. Now, in terms of the things that I'm concerned about, man, this team didn't tackle today. I don't know if it's just a preparation thing, if they realize that they're facing an offense that isn't quite that high powered and they're basically trying to wrap up the division, they're feeling confident about it. But the intensity on the tackling side of this game was lacking, and it could have cost them.
Yeah, it could have. And I mentioned it on Twitter. There's a culprit that continues to not tackle, and it will cost Kansas City a game down the stretch. Now, yes, he made a play a couple of plays later and got a big turnover. Fantastic job there by Marcus Peters, but it's really hard to watch a defense that's struggling tackling and then watch him go up and try to strip the ball as opposed to try to bring down the ball carrier, especially when there's not a lot of people around him.
Well, and I just felt like the team also, there was a little bit from everybody.
Oh, no, absolutely.
A couple of times guys knocked each other off of tackles.
Yep.
Ron Parker's never been the greatest tackler. That's his weak point. He's a good free safety. He's got ball skills. He's not the greatest tackler. But when he and Reggie Ragland are trying to make the play together and they knock each other off of there, it's just one of those games where if you're either intense and focused or you're not. And I think focus was a little lacking today.
Can't say I disagree with that. It was one of those things that you hope they would have fixed by this time of the year, but obviously it's not something that they have to have fixed going into the playoffs because they're definitely going to need it. They're going to have a tough game, whoever they're going to play in 2 weeks.
Now, my other concern is also on the defensive side because for not the first time this season, this team came away with zero sacks on Jay Cutler today.
Yeah, and they were missing some of their stalwarts at offensive line, and that's something you can't have. You bring up not having any sacks, and it makes me question, wouldn't you think that it would be wise for Kansas City to put in a waiver claim on James Harrison?
I can't argue with that. I don't like the player. I think he pushes the boundaries of efficacy in this league sometimes. But for a single run, a guy that's what he does for a third down fill-in, I have no problem with it. If you think he can fit in the locker room without being a total cancer, go ahead and bring him in.
Right. Well, and the other part of it is it's also kind of gamesmanship if you think about it because, you think that maybe Pittsburgh was expecting that they could just drop him and nobody would pick him up on waivers. he's a pass rusher, and PFF has shown, if you haven't checked it out, go check out my timeline yesterday. Go check out Locked On Chiefs yesterday. PFF shows that he has been effective when he's been rushing the passer this year. He still has some in the tank, and if he's going to be limited, I think that's something that you can use.
If he's on a pitch count, same as Tamba Hali, and you can do it feasibly financially, I would think you should be able to.
It's only 70K.
Why not? Exactly. Why not do it? Because Frank Zombo's not getting there. K-Pass is still too young, although I liked a couple of his snaps today. But they have to get home. That's the bottom line. And if you're in a situation, you're late in a game, in a playoff game that you have to win, and you have Harrison, you have Tamba, you have K-Pass, you have Justin Houston, throw them all out there. Get to the quarterback.
Well, and like I said, to me, it comes back to also the fact that you have the ability to take away something that Pittsburgh probably figured they could get back, and you weaken one of your opponents. And the other thing is do you really want a chance that New England is not going to take him?
That's a very
good point. $70,000, it's well worth the investment. Yeah, it's one game, but he's going to be there for the playoffs, and that's a limited check of like 16 grand, I think. So for less than $100,000, you can have James Harrison on your sideline. I would think that would be an investment that Kansas City should make, especially considering that you're right, they can't get to the passer. They cannot get to the passer right now.
Well, and I agree with you on the field. The only caveat for me is, can he fit into this locker room? Because I don't feel he's the greatest of teammates. And that's really a feel that Andy Reid and Bob Sutton and Brett Veach, if they were to bring him in, have to get a feel for, because you just don't want to ruin what you do have working that's working well.
Yeah, and I'm not going to disagree with you on that. I think that it's one of those things that they have to figure out. I think that there's enough strong leaders on the defense that he can be taken care of, and you don't have to worry about it. But I understand where you're coming from. It's something that you would want to consider. Is he going to be a guy that's going to cause problems in your locker room? Obviously, you're not going to know that until you really have him in here. We've talked about this a little bit, but I don't think we've given enough credit to Butker. How clutch has he been as a kicker this year?
Yeah, he's been stone cold, and I'm glad to see it. It gives you a guy that was pretty solid for this team in Cairo Santos. It gives you a leg up on him. I mean, you're talking about tying guys that have led this league, this team, this franchise, in categories over the years. And that's something not only for a rookie, but for a rookie you dang near got for free.
Well, and you're looking at, Cairo Santos, and we talked about this on Twitter. I've talked about this on Twitter a couple of times. Cairo Santos is one of those kickers where I didn't even worry about it when he went in to kick anymore. I just never thought that, if it was a long one, okay, maybe he may miss. But I think he got put in bad situations where he was kicking, 58, 59 yarders, and that's where he got a couple misses in the past couple seasons. But overall, I wasn't worried when he went into the game. He was generally going to make it 95% of the time. And having to go to a rookie kicker, you're sitting there thinking, man, what you thought was going to be a good season from a kicker was going to be, possibly going to a rookie kicker, you're going to expect to miss more. Butker it's ridiculous how well he's kicked this year. It's phenomenal, and it's great to see. Kansas City really got lucky being able to get him from Carolina.
Now, mixed bag on the offensive line. They ran really well outside of Schwartz. Over, looks like, 7 yards a carry for Kareem Hunt out there. Surprisingly, made some good gains inside in the A-gaps where Dominican Sue was lined up quite a bit. So, good for them. Things that I didn't like, this trying to get a single yard, you give it two cracks and you can't get a first down out of it. The interior three were not playing together today. I thought LDT played mostly a good game, just not quite in sync on those two plays in particular. But I thought Witzman played very poorly today, and I'm not sure Fulton was 100% either.
Yeah, it didn't look like they were doing very well. And on the fourth down play, it looked like Travis Kelce missed a key block that may have given Hunt a chance because he was responsible for the safety and he couldn't get there.
That said, what we saw was at least faith in giving the ball to Hunt. 29 carries, I tweeted at the time at halftime, they were well on their way. Matt Nagy is doing a good job of keeping this balance within the offense and trusting the running back. Did he get 100 yards? No. But Nagy, as the play caller, is keeping things unpredictable in terms of not getting one-dimensional and using the run, keeping Kareem Hunt with touches, as well as the RPO action that I think is a significant weapon that they have to emphasize so the teams see this when they prepare for them for playoffs.
Yeah, and you know, you bring up Kareem Hunt, and I have to think that's probably the last action he sees before the playoffs. I don't think that Tyreek Hill is going to play. I don't think Travis Kelce is going to play. I think this is a completely different team in a week.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. And then that brings us to the magic topic. What do you think the team's going to do with the quarterback?
If you're not playing Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, or Kareem Hunt, there's no way you let Alex Smith play.
Understood. I agree. But do you risk any kind of injury or bad outing in his first start by letting Pat Mahomes play?
I think you have to. I mean,
if offensive line is your starters, I can see it's possible. But, man, I'd like to see him, if he's going to play, have all of his tools available.
And I get that, but you can't afford to have Tyreek Hill and Kareem Hunt and Travis Kelce out there.
I agree.
You know, you look at the weapons that he's going to have. You know, he seems to be pretty comfortable with Marcus Robinson from what we saw in the preseason. You know, he's got to be comfortable with the second round guy or the second team wide receiver. So I'm not too worried about that. I think, you know, yeah, you're going to be playing against Denver, but he's a guy that's going to throw the ball more and take more chances than Alex Smith is. And I think this is a great opportunity for him to step in. And I would guess, you know, this has been talked about, I think, by, you know, maybe it was Matt Derrick and maybe it was, you know, maybe it was Trez as well. They both talked about the fact that more than likely the offensive line, I believe, will play next week because those are guys that pride themselves on playing and being available and being healthy. So it would make a lot of sense for those guys to play.
Yeah, and I agree with you. That's the only way, though. If there's any starter that isn't on that offensive line, I don't think you can risk it. I personally wouldn't. My decision, if I'm Andy Reid, is he sits too, and you let Bray play if you're not going to play Ox, because of all those risks, either a poor outing and take a hit to his confidence, the off chance that he could get injured. And also, here's the other thing. I don't know that I want to put Pat Mahomes on tape yet for any other team in this league for next season.
Well, you may be right. I think we're overthinking it. I don't think that there's any opportunity that Alex plays, and I really have a hard time believing that they're going to play Tyler Bray over Patrick Mahomes. But, you know, Reed's done some unconventional things like storming into a press conference dressed as Santa Claus.
Well, that is happening right now, actually. Things I didn't expect to see, folks. As we're recording, Andy Reid's at the podium, and he's jolly old Saint Andy, I guess.
Hey, I'm happy with that. I got no qualms with that at all whatsoever. That's awesome that he's willing to do that. Gotta love that. And you know, he did it in the locker room too. So nothing wrong with that kind of attitude. So
I agree. And with Coach Reed's dress up today, we want to leave you with Merry Christmas thoughts. Enjoy your week. I hope you have your family there with you, and you all can enjoy this win as well. We're going to have a bit of a stranger schedule. We'll have a day off or two so that we can enjoy our holidays. We'll be back with you midweek, and as this team gets ready to close out against the Denver Broncos. Thank you for listening to us today, and we'll talk to you then.
Thanks for listening to the Locked On Chiefs podcast. While you're out there, give us a rating or review and reach out to us on Twitter @RyanTracyNFL and @ChrisClarkNFL. We'll talk to you next time.